Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Steve Rosenblum.
We suck, so your self-quarantine doesn't have to.
Mark Grody.
I think there will be lasting derivatives of this once we get through it, and hopefully we will, with minimal damage, that people will be more aware, honestly, of washing their hands and
good thing.
And apparently wiping.
They suck, so you don't have to.
They can do what they have to do. They know what they have to do. Now they don't have any problem getting it done.
Founding members of the WB Club.
Wake and bake. Come on.
Where's Toby?
So I'm practicing, you know, social distancing, and I have a few tips for everybody, you know, no sharing pipes or joints, things like that.
The three words that describe this show, and I quote,
stink, stank, stunk.
It's Saturday Suckage on the Score.
We should be 670 WSUK.
Welcome in. Saturday Suckage, like it ought to be, with some questions about who's here and why and for how long and who is Ode Sports. There's Odie Sports. How you doing, Odie Sports? He is the player to be the radio host to be named later.
Yeah, I just saw that. I was scrambling right before the show started, so I didn't do our ceremonial back and forth on Twitter, but I saw what you wrote, and it's, hey, Mark Grody Sports, do I have a new partner named Odie Sports? And that's because Bruce Levine pumped the show, kinda, but messed up the name. He says, our guys at Market Odie Sports and Steve Rosenblum until 2. I mean, it's the effort that counts. Thanks, Bruce. Thanks. Right. I know you're trying.
So we're back together again for the first time, and so I've managed to finally fail the drug test, and you've managed to be inaccurate and not put on a professional performance, and so here we are. Here we are. Speaking of non-professional performances, the Cubs and Sox both lost yesterday. Ooh. This is Saturday Suckage like it ought to be, right?
No doubt about it. And both games just kind of got progressively worse.
Sucking.
Like the Cubs game. Like, the Cubs play the Dodgers pretty well, and then all of a sudden you have some late-inning stuff. A guy who hasn't failed a lot this year did last night, and Ryan Tepera giving up the two-run jack to A.J. Pollock in the eighth. And then even Tommy Dance, who has been mostly good this year, giving up a two-run jack to Max Muncy. So, I don't know. This is not what, like, it sucks they lost, but it would appear that some of your sturdier guys were responsible for it. So how mad are you going to get, you know?
I agree, because Tepera is the May reliever of the month in the National League.
He was
just doing it. Yeah, and they were the guys who had combined in the no-hitter. And can I just say this about that?
Yeah, Steve, go ahead.
Combined no-hitter. Well, first I'll tell you that we're broadcasting from the Score Hyundai Studios, presented by your local Hyundai dealers, and you can reach us via the text line. The text zone is brought to you by Rosen Hyundai of Algonquin. Save time, shop online at rosenhyundai.com. 312-644-6767. It's also the number that people refuse to call to get on the air and talk to us. But if somebody calls, we'll have the breaking news sounder, and Trash Panda will alert us and then introduce us to you. The text line already has at 206 telling us Run DMC wrote a song for this show. The kings of suck, there are none lower, more hot air than a leaf blower. I'm not
perfect.
I know Walk This Way. I don't know any other.
I like to think of myself as being fairly familiar with a lot of the Run DMC work, but you got me on that one.
Okay. All right. So anyways, the combined no-hitter was like the relievers didn't know, and Wilson Contreras knew, and other people knew, and it was a thing that was not the whole team. It wasn't like Mark Burley walking up and down the dugout. Hey guys, I'm throwing a no-hitter, and then people turning their heads away. Right.
Right.
It's not that. It was, we don't know, and maybe you're better off. Maybe ignorance was bliss. But while it was the record tying, seventh no-hitter this year, and people were downplaying the significance of it, or like, okay, so what? I think it was huge, and here's why. It came after the sticky substance crackdown.
Mm.
It was in the wake of all of the spin rates plummeting. And I mean, they're plummeting in a big, big way. And the Cubs combined, I mean, this was a game started by Zach Davies, the opposite of spin rate. Whatever, in a thesaurus, if they have antonyms, and they do, the antonym for spin rate is Zach Davies. And he pitched six innings. And then the bullpen, as you saw, was this, that, and the other. And there you go. 1, 2, 3. See you. Good morning, good afternoon, good night. I think the Cubs combined no-hitter was significant because of that. Because it came in the wake of the sticky stuff crackdown.
That is a great point and refreshing, and one that I did not hear all of yesterday. And I also think it was good because, or something that maybe we should have taken more seriously as opposed to just treating it as a novelty, and how do we treat it? I mean, that seemed to be the foremost question on the score without it always being asked, like, how do we handle this? However, your point is great. I'm going to put that right up at the top here on my chart. You know, 1 point for Stevie Sunshine. Also, wow, no, that really is. I'm keeping score. No, that's a really, like, seriously, that's a really good point. I also thought it was something that the Cubs deserved not because of Zach Davies necessarily, because he got away with 5 walks, but because the bullpen has been so good this year. And it was symbolic of that if you sweat through whomever the starter is that is starting, and you get the ball to the bullpen as they did for 3 innings, you're in good shape. And that is the way for the 2021 Cubs. That is, if the Cubs get into the postseason and if the Cubs do damage in it, it will be because of the work of the bullpen. So I thought that it was kind of like a symbolic victory as well, where you give a little bit more of a thumbs up to the bullpen, even though Davies was responsible for some good stuff as well.
And even if all things were being equal, you're dealing with a Dodgers lineup that is one. Look, they're the defending champions. They're one of the best in baseball. That lineup is one of the best in baseball. And that was the first time that a team has been no-hit with 3 or more MVP winners in its starting lineup. Betts, Bellinger, Pujols. 3 or more MVPs, and they were no-hit. So that's significant. These are not chumps. You're not dealing with the Baltimore Orioles or the Diamondbacks or anything like that. You were dealing with a quality lineup, one of the best in baseball. And I found it interesting and rewarding that much of the credit was given to Wilson Contreras because it was a catcher's no-hitter. When you have that many pitchers, and he seemed to be the only guy, the only guy in any of the batteries who knew what was going on.
Yeah.
And he worked it and worked it and worked it. And it reminded me, plus he hit a home run. So here's some real nice.
And he picked a guy off.
So here's, yeah. he became the first Cubs catcher to catch a no-hitter and homer in the same game since his manager did it. Since David Ross did it in a Jake Arrieta no-hitter on April 21st, 2016.
Oh, man. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So there's that. You get that kind of connection there. But years ago, for what used to be the Chicago Tribune, I wrote a story about catching no-hitters and what a catcher, through the catcher's eyes. And I talked to a lot of catchers, including, I think, the only father-son combination, Jason and Fred Kendall. They were the only father-son combination to catch a no-hitter. And one of the guys was Alan Ashby, who caught three. And he was announcing for the... Yeah, he was... Yeah. And he caught Nolan Ryan, Bob Forsch, and Mike Scott. And he said, in one of the quotes was, "You don't want to be the guy who screws it up." That was his fear as a catcher. And meanwhile, Contreras looked like the opposite. Contreras looks like the guy who's in charge. He's directing it. He's doing what you expect a catcher to be, that guy on the field, the way you always looked at, like Fisk represented that. Jason Varitek represented that. Thurman Munson represented that. The whole idea of, like, I'm in charge. They said, look at me. I'm the captain now. That kind of stuff. And that's the way it looked. But Alan Ashby had said in that story, you don't want to be the guy who messes it up. You don't want to be the guy who has to look Nolan Ryan in the eye.
Oh, my God.
And right? Ask Robin Ventura. See Robin Ventura for details.
Yeah. Just look it up, kids.
But there's another part of that story that I've always loved. Do you remember Art Kushner, the White Sox bullpen?
Yes, of course.
Okay, he was a catcher. He played for the Angels. He's catching the Angels and Nolan Ryan in, I think I want to say, 73, in Detroit. And Nolan Ryan's working on a no-hitter. He's into the eighth inning. He always seemed to be into the eighth inning on a no-hitter, right?
Right.
So here comes Norm Cash, a pretty fearsome left-handed slugger. And he's coming up to the plate, and nobody in Detroit's done anything in that lineup. He comes up to the plate with a table leg. He had broken a table in the clubhouse, and he took the leg off, and he walks up to the plate with a table leg instead of a bat. And the Kushner tells the story that the umpire was Ron Luciano, very famous, animated, very theatrical.
In commercials and stuff.
Right, with Earl Weaver, perfect for Earl Weaver. So Kushner's laughing, and Ron Luciano says, you can't do that, Norm. And Cash says, but I can't hit him with a bat. And Kushner says, as he's telling the story, he says, I'm laughing, and then I think, hey, I'm working on a no-hitter here. Go back to the dugout and get a bat. So he turns.
Stop screwing around.
Yeah, and it was that kind of thing, catching a no-hitter, and that was the kind of thing that that catchers go through. You don't want to be that guy, and all of a sudden here comes a guy with a table leg. It's one of the all-time great no-hitters.
That's awesome.
What year did that happen?
I want to say 73.
Okay,
the Angels.
The Simpsons made fun of that, like, ever so briefly in the episode Homer at the Bat, where they have, you know, the nuclear plant softball team. There's a guy, like, because in the beginning of the episode, Homer has, like, his own bat that he made, right? So when he's hitting really well, all the guys decide to bring their own, quote, magic bats in, and one of them has a table leg.
Oh, okay. Well, you have a baseball historian on that show. I did not know that.
Yeah.
But that's the source of it now. See, you're a better person for listening to Saturday Suckage and then Trash Panda right here with the cultural reference. And by the way, I guess I missed this. Do you want to 815 texter? The 815, they always know. You want to talk about your girlfriend who's your cousin?
Oh, no. That's them making fun of me because I got more into my countryside, which is going to be something that Mark wants to bring up and what Mark heard.
Yeah, don't worry, SD. I got us covered. I was listening live.
But I will say, I draw the line at the cousin girlfriend thing. That's gross and weird and just no. We're not doing that. If you text that kind of crap, you're going to get blocked.
Why do you hate your cousins?
Yeah. I love my cousins, but when you insinuate that my cousin is my girlfriend, that's weird, and I'm not going to stand for it. Grody, okay. I'm not. Yeah. No, we're not doing that.
Hey, I will do this, though. Forget everything we've talked about. Here's the most important question of the show, and it is directed to you, Steve Rosenblum. And this is, I need to know, was the one and only diva daughter of yours at Dollar Stadium last night to watch the Cubs and Dodgers? Will she be going to all of the games? I need to know about this.
The Dollar daughter, the Dollar diva, I knew she had tickets for one game. I don't think it was last night. I think it's tonight. I think she gets Alec Mills. I do not think she got stuck with Jake Arrieta, who did not suck, but she was dreading it because twice in the last week, she was back here for Father's Day weekend. First time I had my kids together for Father's Day in 15 years, because she's been out.
Oh, that's awesome,
drove her cross country to college when she was 18, after Father's Day, and she has stayed there, and she's working for E! Channel, and she can't do her job anywhere else, but she was back here to help her paramour move to L.A., to Hollywood with her. So I had them, both Brandon and Allie. And so the Dollar diva told me, she was in the middle of Arrieta rants. Why does he suck? Why is he sucking? Tell him to stop sucking. So that happened a couple times, and I just said, I do not know what to tell you. It's exactly what happened his first year in Philly, where he pitched well in April and thought, oh my God, this is magic. And then he sucked he was inconsistent the rest of the year and sucked more than he didn't. So last night he didn't totally suck. Last night, five innings, two earned runs, three walks, four strikeouts, and his ERA for June plummeted to 7.65. Look, 7.65. Look how much. But he was, you know, his defense sucked behind him. Rizzo and Happ cost him a chance to at least get through six.
That?
Yeah. So he could have gotten through six innings, which would have been the first time he got through six innings since May 14th. It's just not that guy. So I think the diva will be seeing the Dodgers and the Cubs. I think it's tonight. I do not recall. But I will.
Yeah, because I'm not there anymore, so I can't, you know, host her in the booth.
No, and that was very generous of you.
Yeah. No, that was fun. That was so cool. Like, because she and her friend came up, and I think I had a separate booth for them to hang out in for a while. So it was cool
totally
meeting the diva.
Bitching. You were totally bitching.
Oh, I was totally, totally bitching, and they looked like they were having the time of their lives. So she's legit. I always think about her when it's Cubs-Dodgers. And one thing on Jake Arrieta, he was good last night, but in a lineup of guys, which, as you correctly said, includes at times three MVPs, you're not supposed to give up a home run to a guy named Zach McKinstry or something. Like, every once in a while, there's guys on the Dodgers you haven't really heard of, and then usually they're like rookies of the year, but you're not supposed to give up the home run to that guy.
No, you're not. Speaking of home runs, we can take a break, but there's somebody just going nuts with the whole home run thing. And we brought up Zach Davies earlier, so there's a comparison I want to discuss. We also, I'll tell you who our guest list is. Lamont Pope from the Tribune covers the White Sox. He was at reopening dud yesterday, so we'll see. It was really good, and then they started playing baseball, except the Sox didn't play as much baseball. It was a pretty amazing thing that the Mariners did. We'll talk about that. He'll be here at noon. Jim Schwantz. We love our Jim Schwantz. We're going to talk to Jim Schwantz. We'll talk some Bears. But the Jim Schwantz booking is solely based on what's the mayor of Palatine think about the talk of the Bears moving into his neighborhood? Moving right next door, because there's all kinds of positive things come out of it until you're on 53. 53 is an utter disgrace on a good day, if you go anywhere near Woodfield on a hot July afternoon,
rolling
it still
road
sucks. Now you're talking about Bears game and a Bears game near Christmas time. Oh my God, this whole thing is just going to be such a disaster. So we'll see what the mayor of Palatine thinks about that, and whether, I don't know that he has much sway, but we'll talk to him about that. Andrew Vaughn was on earlier. We'll bring back part of the Andrew Vaughn interview that he did on Inside the Clubhouse with Bruce Levine and David Haw. And we'll take your texts at 312-644-6767. 815, my wife has a question. A texter writes, how many wives have to go through having brunch at home while listening to Saturday Suckage at the same time? My answer was more. That is the best answer, and we are happy that your wife, I guess, is being tortured, if that's how it works. So 917 texter, The Simpsons, hey Trash Panda, Matt Groening is a big Cubs fan. I was not aware of that. I'm usually aware of these celebrity Cub fans, but there are a ton of Ron Santo references throughout your Simpsons panorama.
That's actually something I didn't know, so I learned something new about my favorite show today.
Well, look
that. See, it's because he hates the Cubs.
Fun fact.
So he would have known that if it was a Sox fan.
Yes, I hate the Cubs.
Right, exactly.
Okay.
Total hater.
We'll come back, and we have crap and nonsense and other stuff to talk about. So that's what we do here. By the way, Scottie Pippen opened his mouth again, and everybody keeps telling him to shut up and maybe not talk. And here, everybody in our job, you want Scottie Pippen to keep spouting the stupid.
Yeah.
So we'll talk about that. And then Tom Brady had something to say of something that probably involved the Bears. I don't know if you saw it, if you heard it. Even if you did, you want to wallow in this, and we'll bring that to you. We never miss that chance. And more Saturday Suckage is what we do here. I'm Steve Rosenblum. He's Odie Sports, right? Aren't you Odie Sports?
Right. That's right. Look it up on Twitter. That's my handle. Yep.
Yeah, that's it. There was a famous comic strip character named Odie. That wasn't spelled the same
way. Take your word for that one.
Yeah, Odie and Garfield. Odie was...
Garfield, yes, I remember. Yeah. Wait, was Odie part of Garfield?
I thought it's Otis. Or is it Odie?
Otis?
I might be thinking of a different comic strip. Never mind.
Odie is a fictional dog who appears in the comic strip Garfield.
That's right.
Jim Davis wrote that.
Yeah.
Odie. Yeah, so...
J.D. Jim
so Davis. That's it. I just want to. So you know, that's good company. That's a good team picture for you. Tell Bruce. All right. Saturday Suckage, which you probably figured out, and we're grateful for that. Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
It sucks, and it freebases.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Steve Rosenblum, Mark Rohde, Saturday Suckage, or Odie Sports. Odie Sports is with us. Got something for everybody on right here.
Yeah.
Your National League home run leaders. You know who's leading the National League in home runs, Mark? Tied for the Major League lead?
Bryant?
Fernando Tatis Jr.
Oh, yeah, that's right. He hit three.
So there Yeah, there you go, White Sox man.
Usually the guy
he
who
hit
three
just like
probably...
just like your opponents hit three last night.
Yeah. Yeah, the guy who hits three usually moves into some form of the lead in home runs. Yeah.
Well, Vladdy keeps hitting. Vladimir Guerrero Jr. also has 25. So Fernando Tatis Jr., the James Shields payoff. What a thing, huh? What thing. That's going to be...
What a thing. Just throwing it out there for Sox fans. What a thing, huh? Let that float above you for a second if you're a Sox fan driving around. And what a thing. What a thing it is.
Everybody's got their Brock for Broglio. There you go. So, yeah. Tatis Jr. has 25. You know who's second in the National League? Mark?
I don't. As you can see, I picked Chris Bryant off the top of my tired head.
Right.
So,
well, he'll come up.
I have no idea.
I know. 22 home runs.
I know.
Kyle Schwarber.
Ding, ding, ding.
Oh, yeah. Ding, another ding, guy ding, who ding. Recently had a three home run game. God, I got to wake up.
Yeah. All right. Schwarbs. The Schwarb bomb. So with 22 home runs, that's only twice as many as Jock Peterson, who signed for $7 million because for $10 million, you'd get twice as many home runs. So it seemed like the Cubs tried to went cheap and went wrong, because there's Kyle Schwarber hitting. Used to be only homered in John Lester starts. Now he's homering in everybody starts. he is second in the National League and fourth in the majors in home runs at 22. So that's twice as many as Jock Peterson, and just two fewer, I think, than the combined corporate total of Brizzo, the Brizzo Corporation.
Pretty well, he has every reason to be motivated. You know, he was pissed the Cubs let him. You could tell when he came back to Wrigley Field and he accepted the ovation, but he wasn't playing like friendly with Rizzo when he was on first base or just when he was out there. Like, you could tell he had this stern, angry look, like not mad at Cubs fans or the Cubs players, but mad at, you know, Jed Hoyer for letting him go. You could tell. So he's playing angry. He's on a 1-year deal, and we know he could hit 40 bombs. We know he could do that. So we've seen it. But will it last? That is the question. And I have to say this too, like, you're right, he's doubled the home runs of Jock Peterson, but Jock Peterson has been a pretty good player for the Cubs. He's been far from a bust.
Right. He has not been a bust, but you're when you are pinching pennies the way the apparently poverty-stricken Tom Ricketts is, then that makes a difference. That the $3 million apparently was very important, but the 11 home runs to 22 would be very important too when you have this weird, if you're getting to the point where spin rates are going to slow down, now who would you rather have, Schwarber or Peterson?
Yeah I would like to have Schwarber right now, of course.
Okay. So anyway,
don't
was,
you think that part, don't you think that that in that, like, absolutely the Yu Darvish was a money dump? No, 100%. That is the Cubs saying we don't want to afford this. The Schwarber, I believe the Schwarber was more Jed Hoyer and starting to make a change in the overall philosophy of the team and getting more contact guys and, you know, the Nico Horner, Matt Duffy model, you know, that whole thing. So I think that was more Hoyer and finally, like, making a move forward on breaking up the core, or however you want to phrase it.
That's interesting. Well, you could be right. I think it all stemmed from the Darvish trade. It always looked like a money dump. It's how do we pair salary, how do we give up this year. Also in response, something that Hoyer never said, and Ricketts certainly never said, but with Ricketts it always looked like it was all about money. And the idea that this core of guys that included Schwarber, he started that extra inning rally, by the way, that World Series winning rally. And he was part of that core, and the core that still exists here. And some part of me always believed that this was Cubs management / ownership saying, you guys have never lived up to 2016, having wonderful regular seasons and getting to the playoffs, and then and ultimately with last year, where they got off to a 13-3 start in a short season. No one knew what, you know, you had no idea what you're doing, what you're getting into, but the Cubs got off to a good start, and then basically, and the Marlins pantsed them. They were just a group of chokers. And when it came to winning in the playoffs, winning a wild card, winning a playoff game against the Brewers, it was the core of that team failed. And so,
yeah,
all of these guys at an end, all right, here's your last shot. You want to do your own last dance, prove you deserve it, because leading up to this, you haven't. No one said that to me, but no one said that out loud. So when you include Hoyer, I just think that's there. I think that thought is theirs. We haven't won with these guys, so maybe we can win without it, win a different way. That's what you were saying,
yeah,
right?
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, that they, like, here's the tricky part for Jed Hoyer with all of this. He, as you alluded to, for the last 3 years, we've seen this whole thing play out. In what was it, 2018, it was the choke away the division, right, against Milwaukee, uh-huh, and then lose to Colorado. 2019,
both home games,
yeah, right. 2019, they didn't make the playoffs, right? Oops. 2020, last year, they scored one run in two games against Sixto Sanchez and Alcantara.
Just to clarify, I mean, not a good thing.
Yeah. So, like, it's been the same thing where one year is a fluke, but we've seen this pattern for 3 years where the offense has had this massive decrescendo. And that's why I've been worried recently about the Cubs, because the offense has gone back into something of a slump. And that is, other than starting pitching, your offense going bad at the wrong times. That's a huge deal for their part of the Cubs story since 2017.
Well, the Dodgers gave everyone the playbook on the Cubs in the playoffs. The regular season, it wasn't nearly as acute, but in the playoffs, it was just high fastballs.
Yeah.
They were Lori Petty, the way Gina Davis described her sister in League of Their Own. High heat, can't lay off it, can't catch up to it. And that was the story. That was always the story of the Cubs hitters in the playoffs. And that's what,
well,
that's how teams victimized them.
And I'll say this, that's why part of the collective no-hitter was the story for the Cubs the other day, but they also beat Walker Buehler. So that was, like, it was like whenever the Cubs beat an ace and they're in the midst of a race and the lights are on, I'm always like, okay, that's good, because that's what the Cubs are going to have to beat in the postseason, and that's what the Cubs have not beaten in the postseason over the last few years, or even down the stretch in regular seasons.
Yes. Okay, well, we'll see. I just think, I don't know if they're going to... Still waiting to see what this does. Like, do you know where the Cubs are at? Like, if you're... I can't imagine being Jed Hoyer and, like, trying to figure this out. Where are we? What are we? If you go... You look at the standings, okay, we're a game back in Milwaukee, but really? We're a game back? But we'd be in fourth place in the West where the three best teams are, the Dodgers and the Padres and the Giants, in whatever order they are on that particular day. So do you have any idea where the Cubs are? Do you know?
No,
Hoyer think of this?
I do think that, you know, we all talked about, you know, a few weeks ago when June began about the schedule that existed, and they've passed some tests, but it's right now. Keep an eye on this 10-game stretch, this road trip here, which still has two games left at the Dodgers. Then they go to Milwaukee, and then even the trip to Cincinnati. You know, Cincinnati is a middling, you know, 500-ish type of team that is not bad. So, and then I think they've got the Phillies at home after that. So I think it's exactly this stretch where maybe we won't see it. Maybe we won't see it, but I think Jed Hoyer might see it, or he's already got some things made up in his mind. I mean, he can't be flying by the seat of his pants completely. Like, he can't be just... I doubt Jed Hoyer is really saying, well, this is it. This is the 10 games, and I'm going to make decisions on the future of this franchise. There has to have been some things that he's already concluded or decided upon, or there better be, because this team does not look like it's built to get to a World Series at this point.
No, you we're not even sure they're built to get to the postseason. Again, it comes down to the core. Like, prove you deserve to be here, and that's what I don't know that he's arrived at any decisions. Maybe he has. They certainly seen more than we have. He certainly has a better handle. Maybe he's been forced to arrive at certain decisions born of finances. Now that the stadium's open, though, and really fans are going nuts, and maybe there's a wheelbarrow full of money, I have no idea. But he's a billionaire, and billionaires sign people that they want to keep to long contracts, and that has not happened. There's an easy way to make a player love you and make a city love you, and you pay those players money. And they are not doing that. So there are one or two reasons. One is they don't think they're the right players, that they've given them a chance and they've seen them fail, and why are they waiting around for more? It would be insane. Or the other one is the owner says, no, sorry, find something cheaper. Find a placebo. They're Cub fans. They'll always show up. We'll see. I'm just guessing. No one's told me that. I'm just guessing. But those are the clues. I've connected some dots, Mark.
Ooh, wait, I love when you connect dots. It is.
So you know what? Well, let's connect the dots. One of them's on the point of Scottie Pippen's head. I don't know if you saw what he said recently. He's got a book coming out. This is pretty remarkable stuff, and we just hope he keeps talking. We just hope Scotty keeps talking. We'll share it with you after this. I'm Steve Rosenblum. He's Mark Rohde. Saturday Circuit, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Welcome in, welcome back. Saturday Circuit, Steve Rosenblum, Mark Rohde with you. Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. So Scottie Pippen's got a book and a bourbon coming out. The book's coming out later. I think the bourbon's out now or whatever. Scottie Pippen might have been. I have no idea if he was drinking or not.
One bourbon, one scotch, one beer.
Is Paul Sullivan coming on? That's his walk-up music.
He still works at the Trib, right?
Yeah, right. He's been charged with turning the lights out after it's over. In an interview with GQ Sports that was released on Thursday, Scottie Pippen called Phil Jackson's decision to give Tony Kukoc the last shot in a 1994 playoff game, quote, a racial move to give Kukoc a rise. Ooh. This is the first time I'd ever heard any hint of that. So to recap, for those of you who are not alive at that point but don't remember it, it was Chicago Stadium, and it was the year after Jordan retired, Scottie Pippen's team, and it was the Knicks in the playoffs, so it's basketball versus football, and it's a rough and tumble thing. And Bulls have ball, timeout, and Phil Jackson calls Kukoc's number during the timeout. Scottie Pippen is supposed to inbound the ball. Scottie Pippen doesn't get off the bench. Scottie Pippen sits there for the final 1.8 seconds. The ball gets inbounded. Kukoc hits the shot. He's a hero, but there's little joy in this whole thing. You could see it on Phil's face. And Bill Cartwright, especially. Bill Cartwright delivered an emotional speech after the game. And I remember Jay Adonde, I was at the Sun-Times, Jay Adonde was covering it, and he goes, by the time he worked the locker, he says, it's exactly what you thought. Scottie just said he wasn't getting off the... He wanted the ball. He was mad that it went to Kukoc. On top of this, what wasn't necessarily always reported is that the play before that, Kukoc screwed up the triangle offense and was stuck in the corner where Pippen was supposed to go or move or be able to go baseline, and Kukoc didn't know where he should be, and that cost Pippen a chance to be the hero earlier, and then Phil picks Kukoc to take the final shot. So GQ Sports quotes Pippen as saying, I don't think it's a mystery. You need to read between the lines. Okay, so already, is it a mystery or not, Scotty? Am I reading between the fine lines or not? Quote, it was my first year playing without Michael Jordan. Why wouldn't I be taking that last shot? I've been through all the ups and downs, the battles with the Pistons, and now you're going to insult me and tell me to take it out? I thought it was a pretty low blow. I felt like it was an opportunity to give Kukoc a rise. It was a racial move to give him a rise. After all I've been through with the organization, now you're going to tell me to take the ball out and throw it to Tony Kukoc? You're insulting me. That's how I felt. What do you think of that, Mark?
Well, I will say that I agree with Scotty, like working from your final couple sentences there. I'm with Pippen that it's a good point that he's the star of that team. He is there winning and got to the position they did ultimately that year because of Scottie Pippen. So it's true. It's true. Maybe he should have been the one taking the shot. He's got a point there. Secondly, with the racist accusation that ultimately that Phil Jackson is racist. Like, there's a lot of racism. I don't think Phil Jackson is in that club. I don't think. So, and part of the reason is because usually if somebody makes an accusation that hefty, there will be other players who will come out and back it up, right? Be like, hey, yeah, this happened to me too, or Phil said this one time, or, you know, off the record, Phil, you know, was nicer to the white guys than the black guy. Like, it would, but that none of that is happening. So that's crazy, I think, that Pippen came out and said that. And the one other part, too, that I didn't know about the Coup coach not being in the right place. So I am team Pippen when it comes to, yeah, he should have had that shot. But the racist allegations, that's some fragile territory right there.
Yeah, that's yeah, well, if he believes it, he believes it. I had never heard a whiff of that until reading it just now. But Scottie Pippen sounds like the worst teammate ever. How can you be a leader when you say stuff like that, when you feel like that? And if you're going to say you've gone through all the Michael Jordan stuff, then you were there when Michael Jordan passed the ball to John Paxson in 1991, and Paxson scored 20 points in the fourth quarter, so your team won the title. And if you've been there through all the Jordan stuff, then you watched Michael Jordan pass the ball to Steve Kerr for the championship shot. That's the way a teammate goes. And besides inbounding the ball, you still can get the ball back. I just think Scottie Pippen sounds like the worst teammate ever. I don't think he was, but in a moment, his head explodes. I just think that's it. There's such polarity with Scottie Pippen moments, but the way he comes across in this, and the quotes go on, go back and look at it. It was my team. What are you telling me to take the ball out of a game-tying shot? It wasn't even a game-winning shot. Why are you trying to let him be the hero? He ain't the leader of this team. No. You're trying to make him a hero to hit that shot. If he misses, he's playing with house money. He's playing what I've done earned here. Okay? I've been earning this for Michael Jordan for years, and he gets the last shot, and I'm supposed to step inside and let Coup coach get in there. Well, if the idea is to win, which is what a leader should be, the example a leader should be setting, then yeah, you do whatever helps your team win the game. And I just think he sounds like the worst kind of teammate.
Well, and the ironic part about that is, and you're right there, that is a bad teammate moment, but the irony here is that most of those Bulls players that played with Pippen swear by him as, like, actually the antithesis, like, the best teammate. You know what I mean? Like,
right. That's why this is shocking.
Right.
Right. I just think, I remember that moment, his head exploded, and then, and he became, what turned out to be a Pippen landmine along the way. Some people will go back to the migraine against Detroit, and they look at it, but then you saw in one of the Knicks series where Michael Jordan is, you know, Xavier McDaniel gave Scottie a nod on his forehead. Jordan is right there. And he, you know, say, this is my little brother. I'm sticking up for him. We're sticking up for each other, that kind of stuff. And it became, Pippen became emboldened, and he became that. I mean, who shut down Magic Johnson when the Bulls won their first title? That was when Phil switched Pippen on there. Pippen was, like you said, everybody's called him the greatest teammate, the greatest Robin to Batman.
Yeah.
And then you hear this, and you chalk it up to knowing Scottie says stupid things. They can go to hell, you know, and he wants to be traded when the Bulls told him not to sign the contract. He wanted the security, the money, the big contract. They gave it to him. They told him not to sign the contract. he signed it anyways, and then he didn't like the contract he signed. It's just that kind of polarity in his person. But his play on the court, with that exception of that moment, was an astonishing, because he was seemed to do everything and be everywhere. But that's just part of, you know what? Keep talking, Scotty. It makes for Chicago Sports Radio go. It's a big help. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back. We'll talk some White Sox. Such as it was, the reopening dud, we will talk some White Sox at the top of the hour with Lamon Pope of the Chicago Tribune. I'm Steve Rosenblum. He's Mark Grody. Mark Grody is the best teammate. He would take the ball out of it. You'd inbound the ball, wouldn't you, Mark?
Oh, yeah, 100%. Yeah. And I think that you would have, everybody would say that at the score. I'm just a great shining example of a good teammate.
We're gonna hear a part of that later, because we're not only gonna do what Mark heard, we're gonna do what Mark and Steve didn't hear. So we'll share those stories. But first,
good.
Talking White Sox, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah, you're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.